Welcome to Creative Direction. This podcast was created to celebrate the courage it takes to become an entrepreneur. And we discover how working artists and creatives are making their way. As entrepreneurs, many of us had the desire, but not the roadmap. Creative Direction is meant to explore the diverse voices and approaches to working and making a living. It is our hope that this podcast helps provide some insights that might aid you on your own creative journey. I'm excited to welcome my co-host for this episode, Elijah Teague. He is also our producer and editor for Creative Direction. Welcome to Creative Direction. All right, well, I'll start off, and this is going to be a lot of flattery, so get ready for it.
Oh, boy. That's my least favorite part about it.
Well, Dan, I'm excited to have you on Creative Direction this week. You're a multi-talented artist that frequently blurs the line between design, art, and fashion. You're a painter. You also run audio for live performances. I mean, what do you not do? I don't really know how to describe you. I know you're an artist, but I don't know really how to describe you very well. How would you like describe yourself?
I guess just a designer. I guess just a visual artist mostly. Artist, skater, designer.
I mean, skater, that's another thing I forgot to fucking add in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually not the first thing people go to, but it's definitely a big influence on my work.
Yeah.
Even if not directly, it's like, it's in there. It's baked in to some degree.
Right. The culture is like hard not to let it bleed into everything, right?
Yeah.
I've seen you do like gnarly murals and things like that. We'll talk about some of your sunglasses a little later, but like, how did you get started? Did you go to art school, or were you like self-taught, or how'd that work?
I started drawing when I was like 2, and I was one of those kids that could draw like hands, like complicated hands and like, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that pretty early.
That's so
my
funny.
My sister was like a really detailed painter. She did like hyper realistic painting, and so I was always she did that, and then I was just drawing cartoon characters and like Simpsons and all my favorite video game characters and stuff. So mm-hmm. there was always two sides of it where she was doing these gallery shows, and I was just kind of like playing video games and drawing like the characters. But yeah, I mean, I was one of those kids that just like doodled through school and eventually went to community college at College of DuPage, did graphic design and painting there, and then did 2 years of that, went to Columbia in Chicago, did photography there,
and then dropped out. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So
same. I did the same thing at Columbia.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what they're best known for. They're non-graduates. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of, Columbia is where I met a lot of my current friends. And, like, I think that's probably the best thing I got out of it was the like group of friends that I formed there. And those are the people I'm still hanging out with now. And that's how I met the people for, you know, that started Shithole and kind of.
Yeah, for the people that don't know, what is Shithole?
Yeah.
Shithole's a DIY free show that happens anywhere in the city that doesn't charge money. We'll let people kick audience members out if they talk during the show. And boy, it's funny. I haven't done this like description in so long because we just haven't been doing shows. It's so weird. We're basically like a traveling show that doesn't charge money, and then we put up between like 15 and 30 people every show. It's a very run and gun show. Everyone does 4 minutes. And it's like, yeah, we just, you know, anyone, like we have like veterans go up, and then we have people doing stand up for the first time going up, and it's comedy, music, performance art, poetry, like anything you could think of.
Wow.
And that started just in a garage.
You were doing
2013.
Like, in the normal time, you were kind of doing like 3 shows a week, something like that. It's crazy.
At some point we were, yeah. It kind of was fluctuating a lot. In the summer of 2000, 2014, I think, we had a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday show, all at three different locations. So we had to, like, carry gear all over the city, like, every weekend. And then we would have – people would be booking us, you know, to do their shows. So we'd have to do, like – sometimes we do, like, nine shows in a row. Like, yeah, it's insane.
But that's gnarly.
Definitely taking a break from that right now.
And so, like, through the shithole stuff, you were getting booked for other gigs with the audio things. Is that what you're saying? Or
yeah. So yeah. So basically, I wasn't doing any theater, or like, I didn't even know improv was. I had been to one improv show, like maybe 3 years before that, and it was one of those things where my neighbor was in an improv group, and he was like, "Hey, we're going to, you know, we have a show tonight," and it was, you know, the first improv thing I'd been to, so it was like me and two other people in the audience, empty bleacher seats, and then like people doing object work, like fucking around with like invisible boxes. So I was just like, I don't know what the fuck is going on right now. And then like, yeah, years later, I'm like in an improv troupe, like multimedia improv troupe, mm-hmm. and like running a show and all this. But really, what happened is I moved into this house. I was dating someone, and I knew only one person in this house of nine people, and they're all like actors, screenwriters, directors, cool. and like musicians. And the night that I moved in, it was the second or third shithole show, and I just told them that I had like been messing around. I like have been making beats for a long time, just on my computer. It's just mm-hmm. something that I do and don't necessarily like release or like put anything out. I just mess around. So I told them that, and they're like, "Hey, do you want to run lights and sound for the show?" And then I just said yes, and then basically just turned into me doing that every week, and then, you know, more than once a week, more than twice a week, and just learning how to like do needle drops and pull lights and like do colors and just like slowly learning.
Yeah, just kind of all on the spot.
Like, yeah, exactly. And it's like we're all learning how to like run a show and like you know, like deal with audience members, deal with performers, and we're all kind of learning how to produce in our own ways. And so by the time Cards Against Humanity had a theater, like their office and headquarters set up and their theater was built, we had a relationship with them because we did a pop-up show in their warehouse while it was still under construction.
Cool.
When it was just like the two, Ross, I think you would know,
yeah.
know this, but those two shipping containers that are in the main office, when it was being built, that was literally like the only thing in there. So we did a show in between those two shipping containers.
That's wild.
And then, yeah, started a relationship with them. And then, yeah, once the theater came around, they kind of just knew that I did that already. And then started doing work for them, and then through that people would run shows there and then would see that I would be doing tech, and they'd know me from Shithole and they know I was cool, so they were just like, "Hey, can you do this for me or whatever?" And then just started getting gigs like that. And yeah, that's kind of how the whole tech thing happened. It's just like good, right time, right place, and mm-hmm. just learning.
That's wild.
And like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the theme with a lot of my shit, is just like self-taught. Like I just get interested and I kind of immerse myself in something and do the research if I need to and just fail until it starts working.
Yeah, that was
basically
like your iterative process is really interesting. We're probably going to skip around a lot during this podcast. Will be really exciting, but like, fuck it. It doesn't matter. that's cool. Like one of the things. I mean, you make a lot of stuff. We could maybe transition to that a little smoother, I guess. Figure out like you were.
Yeah.
How did you start doing laser cutting stuff?
It's Cards too. I mean, yeah. Cards had that print studio, and Kevin Budnick was the manager of the print studio, and we were cool just because I was at Cards a lot. I would just go in early before I had to tech a show and, you know, make a coffee and just talk to people around the yeah. office. And yeah, I mean, at the time I was making clocks by hand with power tools. So I had a router. I would buy like inch thick piece of wood and like cut a circle with a router out of this solid wood and like make a clock, like take hands from old clocks and put it on there, put like, you know, fit them on. And then someone said something about the laser cutter at Card. So I had the fob to get in the building for the tech gig. So I would just like do a gig and then let everyone out and lock up and then go into the print studio and just like mess around with the laser and started cutting out clock hands out of like wood. And then eventually learned about acrylic and that like changed everything. So I started cutting clock faces out of acrylic and started just like building clocks from scratch with acrylic parts.
Pretty intricate.
I'm skipping around.
But. No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. This is a conversation. We're organic anyway. But it's not linear. I mean, the thing about that is like the iterative nature of your work is so cool because you really do kind of dig in and like just analyze every part and see how you can make it better and then tweak it, figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the clocks you're making are really intricate. There are a lot of like fitted pieces and, you know, they change and evolve over time. Like you said something to me one time that was really funny and I really liked it. That was like, you really like the idea of clocks, but you hate the idea of time. So a lot of your clocks like don't even have.
There's
like,
no numbers. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, but like the clock is like an art object is kind of a really interesting thing that you've really hit hard. I actually really like your collaboration with Garth Ravaca.
Oh yeah.
And actually oddly, I met him through his restoration business when I was working through the auction house.
Oh, nice.
We met.
I worked for him.
Oh, really?
Did you know that? Oh yeah.
No, I had no idea.
I worked at Furniture Revival. That was my first furniture gig was with Garth.
Oh, that's such a small world, man. It's so wild.
Yeah.
But he made these like pizza slices of pizza out of wood.
Oh, I saw that one, yeah.
Right. And then you added some clock and stuff to it, which is really cool and wild.
How long have you been doing these clocks for?
Clocks started in 2016 maybe. At some point one of the co-producers of Shithole started to paint. So he had only really done performance art at that point, and he wanted to make start making tangible art. So he would go to the thrift store and buy paintings, like pre-made paintings that people had just donated, and then paint over those. And so the idea with that was to just, instead of just looking at a blank canvas, you could like look at this thing, get inspired by it, and maybe like fuck around with it, add to it. Maybe it's like a Bob Ross style painting, and you draw like a, or you paint like a dead body in the river or something, shit like that. We would just like mess around with thrift store pieces. And so I would do that too. And then at some point I started finding clocks and would take them apart and, paint maybe the face. I would do like splatter paint on the face and then spray paint the hands, and would just kind of like remix and like upcycle clocks. And that's kind of how the whole clock thing got started. And then once I discovered the laser and the like colored acrylic and like the plexiglass, that's kind of where I started making them from scratch.
That's awesome. Really cool. That's super, super cool. Can you tell me, I tell them about the sunglasses, but I also talk about the right twice a day clock. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about like that concept and what that's all about? And
it's another one of those things where it's, I just don't, I like the idea. I like the passage of time, but I don't like I'm the type of person that wears a watch 24/7. Like I'm kind of stuck to it. Like I wear it to bed. I wake up and look at my watch and like, it doesn't leave my arm. So like having something that is just moving and you can, I don't know, just for people that don't know, like it's a clock that lines up only at noon and midnight. And just the idea of like waiting for one moment, and if you don't catch it, then it's gone. You have to wait another 12 yeah. hours. I really like that. And honestly, it was going to be something simpler, but it's already very simple. It was going to be something where it lined up multiple times, and I was at Cards working on it. And Kevin Reeder, I don't know if you know, have met Kevin Reeder, but he's a creative director at Cards. But he walked in and he was just like, "Why don't you just have it line up one time?" And it was because it was going to be like at like 12, 3, 6, right. and 9. And he's just like, "Why don't you just do it at 1 or at noon?" And I'm like, "Oh shit." So that's kind of how the whole thing. So like, I had my Illustrator document open, and it just had the whole like process. Like if you go on my website, I have like one of the photos is the entire process of just me messing around, because it started off as a Fibonacci, like a ode to like the Fibonacci sequence, right. the golden ratio, and then it just kind of like slowly transforms into this thing. It's a weird process. It's probably like one of the more abstract ways of like getting to an end point.
Yeah, that's cool though. That's like,
but it's really just about like being patient and being patient and like alert and receptive, kind of is the theme, I think.
I mean, that even kind of ties into that process where, you know, Kevin Reeder came in and like that was a moment right there where he's like,
"Yeah,
oh wait, maybe that's what I should mm-hmm. do." You know, like that's
exactly
that's,
yeah.
That's pretty rad. It's cool that your community is kind of constantly influencing what you're doing, which is really fun. You know, your artist community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it does only just take one other person's perspective to just see something in a completely different way.
Yeah, that's wild. How did you, so you're doing the clocks, right? You know, your original designs, and you're kind of taking some pop culture references from like The Simpsons and stuff like that, which are awesome. Like those are like, I know this is going to sound maybe weird to say out loud, but like the most beautiful Simpsons clocks I've ever seen. You know, how does that like shift into sunglasses? How did you make that move?
That's a great question.
You're just like, I need some shades that are cooler than any stupid shit out there. Or?
Kind of. I think it was just, I was... Like I had done like clock earrings, and I was trying to do watches. Great.
I was dying when I saw that.
I need to make another limited. I only did one pair. I want to do a little limited run of those again. It's so hard to work with like watches. Like the parts are so small.
Seriously.
And if you lose like one clock or like watch hand, and it flies across the room, or you drop it on the floor and you can't find it. It's just like, well, I'm fucking done for the day. So, I think I was just at a time where I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Usually how I work is I just experiment and kind of mess around with different, like, I don't want to say mediums, because I feel like I work in the same medium just on different things, but yeah, just experimenting with different objects and glasses just kind of happen, you know. It's come a long way. Like I think they just started very boxy, and it was like, I had seen someone make like a very simple pair of frameless glasses on Instagram, and I saw that it was the exact same acrylic that I was using and the laser, and I was like, oh, I can just laser cut that. And that's kind of what happened, is I bought a pair of reading glasses that use these specific like fittings to fit the temple arms to the lenses, and just laser cut like mounting holes, and then I just like reverse engineered this thing and like figured out how to make these like similar kind of glasses that I had seen. And I was like, oh, I can just do this with any acrylic, any color. And then just kind of that just opened the door for a bunch of shit. And that was the frameless stuff. And then at some point I was just in like researching like glasses parts. I had found like hinges that you could attach. And so I started messing around with making my own temples. And then that's kind of where like the full frame stuff started coming along. And now, now I'm messing around with making prescription glasses, like as of like the last 2 weeks. I'm just trying to keep evolving it.
It's so rad. You're still like unpacking again. Like, you know, you start with the clocks where you found some, you're taking them apart, remixing them, started making your own. Then you're like, you're doing the same thing with the glasses. Like, how do I improve this thing? All these, it's a very like designer approach almost. Cause you're like, where are the pain points? How do I fix those? How do I change this? How do I make this part better? But it has still a very, like, I don't know, people tend to blur that line between art and design now, but it, there's an art approach to how you start selling these things too, where you're like, this is a drop. I'm dropping these things.
Is it always one of a kind? You're always, all the drops are like one off?
Yeah, well, it's like a limited run of one specific thing. So it'll be like somewhere between like 15 and 30 of a piece. The latest one I did, the no glasses, is like 240 just because there's so many colors.
Right.
And that was something where I wanted to, like, I knew I was going to be doing it during quarantine and I just wanted to have, I wanted to just have inventory basically because I'm used to just trying to sell out like on in the first week with such a limited number or something. I was just like, oh, it would be nice just to have income like just having like 200 or something of a piece and just like slowly getting orders over time, which is what ended up happening, and it's been really nice. So
that's really cool.
So I figured that if I made enough of that, then I could kind of experiment and like keep pushing other stuff while I just have a stockpile of this specific thing.
That's cool. So it's basically you're stacking potential earnings so you can keep iterating and making new things, which is really cool. Tell me about the no glasses. For anyone that hasn't encountered them before, like what's the idea behind those? And kind of just give me a description. We'll link to it in the show notes, but like
for sure
so people can see it. It's very visual.
I was thinking about having like a smorgasbord of like all my glasses on hand and just like
you could change it every 5 minutes. I mean, we'll wait if you want to go around.
No, it's all good. So the no glasses, I mean, it started off as just another one of those things that just slowly evolved, you know. The the intention wasn't there when I made them. It just, I just thought, like, I was messing around with the frameless glasses and I just like did like NO and it just looked like, from a design perspective, it just looked clean and it looked cool and it looked like there's like a certain, I forget what it is, but there's a certain rule when you put a square next to a circle where like if they're technically the same, you know, size, they're not actually the same size, so you have to shrink one. So I like used that and then it ended up looking really even, and then I was like, oh well, this is like, if you wear these you can kind of like, this is more of a statement than I think it is. Started messing around with, you know, I did a couple prototypes and it was just like a blue clear acrylic or something. And I was like, oh, and then I had this mirrored acrylic and made them in mirrored acrylic. And then I was like, oh, if someone's like looking at you and it says no, and they're looking back at themselves being told no, like, and you not don't even have to say anything. So it basically like formed into this idea of like anti-harassment and like anti-catcalling, where, you know, you could just wear these glasses that are basically just like a fuck you,
like, you know, yeah, that could be the next
design. A little don't bother me. Yeah. And like, you know, someone if they're going to harass you or bother you, they have to like look themselves in the face while they're saying it to you, if they're close enough at least. So so hopefully that's kind of the right concept behind that. But yeah, my friend Becca also helped a lot with the like Becca Brook is another visual artist. She helped a lot with like promo for that, and we made a video for it, and just kind of like went around the city, rode the train, and like took shots of her wearing them, and yeah, it was really cool. So she helped me a lot with the like direction on that.
That's awesome. That sounds like another solid collaboration. That's super cool. It's so nice that you have this community that you've built around you, that you guys all help each other. You know, that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's very cool.
With this website and all these products that you're selling, did the business side kind of just come sort of like your tech training, where it's kind of just like on the spot, learn as you go, or did you kind of have like a mentor to help you with that, or how did this business side come about?
The business is just a byproduct of, you know, just knowing that I needed to have something like a clean website. And then mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I have a website, I have e-commerce. And I was like, oh, should I actually have to figure this out now? Like, I have no business training. Like my parents owned a fried chicken business for 40 years. Ooh. And I didn't like soak up any of that knowledge. some of it came from Ross. Like, I remember, you know, asking Ross to sit down, and he had at one point mentioned when we were working for the same furniture company that if I ever needed advice for like business stuff or budgeting, like just to hit him up. And I hit him up for coffee and lunch one day, and he helped me like get a budget together. And he was the first person to be like, what do you want? Like, tell me what you want, and like, you can budget for it and you can set goals for it. So, I mean, I always like, I think that was probably like a big light bulb moment for me. That was like, oh shit, totally. I can figure this stuff out.
Someone did that for me, you know, and that's the only reason I was able to do it for you. It's because it's a lot easier to have something to aim for than it is to kind of be in this nebulous space, being like, ah, man, I wish I could be an artist and pay for my life somehow without even knowing what that even means. You can't ever get there, you know?
And like,
you're like one of the hardest working people I know. Like, I think there's no reason Dan can't figure this out. You know, he's just like between shithole and all the restoration stuff. And then just even your practice, like, you're a very disciplined guy. Like, so yeah, it was good. I mean, it's always fun sitting down with people doing that process. I think I actually done it a little bit with Elijah too.
Yeah. I was going to say,
because it also like sparks light bulbs in my head for things that like I want, you know? And like, I always do that. Yeah. I think we do that exercise together where you like basically look at your monthly expenses and figure out how much you need to make and, or want to make, and like the fun shit you want to do and how much more you need to make to do that every year. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's important too. Right. So like, you know, I'm glad that was helpful for you. I mean, I didn't really give you any of the roadmap. I mean, you kind of figure out all the other stuff on your own, like the hard stuff, like the limited edition drops, which is very much in line with your kind of art mission too. And and now this new evolution where you're like, I have inventory. Like, that's rad. That's a rad step.
Yeah. You know? Thank you. Yeah.
That's a confident move to be like, I'm going to make 300 or something, because I know eventually they're going to sell. You know, like that.
Yeah.
does that feel baller? See, or
like, I mean, it's the only, I guess. I mean, it's more of like a, I don't want to call it like a desperate headspace, but it's definitely more of like, it's less, I know this is going to sell, and it's more like, I hope this will eventually sell.
That's very honest. But,
yeah.
Maybe I just know that it's all going to sell.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I'm here for that. I appreciate that. But I think, I mean, in terms of like the business stuff, I think I was just living very like abstract and arbitrarily with like how I navigated a lot of that shit, and just having having some person tell you anything, like any kind of knowledge, dropping any knowledge. Because I think like when I had that budgeting, I'm pretty sure I went home and then the next morning like chilled with my neighbor and my roommate, and was just like, my neighbor who's a photographer, and then my roommate who was like a filmmaker, and it, like, told them the same shit. It was like, make a budget. What are you spending every month? Like, what do you want? Like, you know. So I immediately transferred that energy and that knowledge. So
that's awesome.
And that felt good for me too. So I think you're right when you're like, yeah, you learn more from that, because when you reiterate what you just took in, then you're reinforming and like looking to the next thing as well.
Yeah, and some of that is like practical stuff where like you learn that people are planning for a rainy day a little bit more than you are, mm-hmm. or and some of it's like, oh man, that's some cool shit I want to do too. I guess I need to make exactly. more money. I guess I need to like turn out a few more photos or a few more glasses. Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's just a fun process to keep revisiting over and over again and make sure you're aligned, yeah. you know?
Yeah. Cool. And I think people just don't talk about money enough. I think we have this weird thing in our culture where we just like have to act like everything is like we are in total control, or like we're doing okay, and we're all fucking hurting and just like lying to our friends and lying to ourselves, and like it's so weird. So any opportunity to like get real about money is like really good for me, I think. Especially as an artist, like a struggling artist who's just trying to like figure out shit.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it is being an artist, you like, and I'm the same way, so you kind of just want to do your thing, right? You know, mm-hmm. you like, you just want to focus on your craft, but without having money to eat, you know, it's like hard to do that. It's even harder, but you know, it's, and you can kind of win a little bit by luck if you work hard enough, but you could also have a much, like, I never wanted to be organized, right? But like, as soon as I start getting more organized, and Elijah's going to like kick me later for saying that, because he knows I have a long way to go to be organized a little bit, but like, you know, it gives you it means freedom, you know, it means that you can plan a little bit or get more done, so you can have more runway to make more cool shit, you know. So it's like
so far I pretty much only have majority classroom experience, so it's a lot of, you know, deadline oriented stuff. It's very structured, and you're kind of constantly on a consistent schedule. And kind of one of the big themes that have come up after talking with Ross and doing all these podcasts is just the concept of time management. So I'm curious kind of how you balance your work life with your personal life, and kind of like what a day in the life of Dan is like.
I'm glad you're asking me this now instead of like 2 months ago, because it would have been vastly different and irresponsible, because the beginning of quarantine was not good for me. But I mean, I'm in a spot now where I wake up some like 8 or 9, get up, make breakfast, walk and get coffee, kind of just chill for a bit. You know, write what I want to do. I'll either do daily goals or do weekly goals. I like to set weekly goals because it's just a little easier to take one thing off every day, or like not hold myself to getting a specific. Oh shit! Hold on. Someone is calling me. Okay, they're gone. Yeah. So pretty much eat, get going, write some stuff down. I'll head to Cards, and what's nice about Cards is, one, it's completely empty because it's no one is in the office working, and two, it's just nice to go anywhere else but home to do work.
Oh yeah, totally.
So I'll get out of the house, I'll bike over there and try to get there by like 11, and then just basically work on whatever I need to work on, whether it's like starting a commission or like following up with people, emails or like Instagram messages, or just experimenting with stuff until somewhere between like 6 and 8, and then head back home. And then that's kind of like where I like tap out and don't do any more work, and then spend the rest of the night just hanging or like talking to folks, watching something, and just like smoking weed and like listening to music and just chilling out and just separating like work from like fully like going to work and then coming back and like not working.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah. So that's something that was definitely not established early on in quarantine. Right. So I'm glad I'm in that spot now.
Yeah, that kind of threw off everyone's schedule a bit.
And goals. Yeah, totally. When your goal is like, oh, fuck, I have to get groceries today. Like, how do I do that safely without people running me over with their shopping carts? And then, like, then you're just exhausted and you go back to sleep. Like, that's hard. But, yeah, I feel like that routine and setting goals has really helped me as well, kind of getting that back together, you know. Do you keep them all in one spot, or do you, like, look back at what your goals were, or do you just kind of, like, roll through it? I've been thinking a lot about this lately.
I mean, it's not a great look, but these are field notebooks. These are full of random shit. There's lots of, you know, journaling and shit in these. They're unmarked, which is terrible. But I mean, I always like to go back and kind of flip through stuff, because there's a bunch of, like, it's a mixture of like show lineups and like doodles and just like journaling and stuff. So
that's cool.
I have recently been better about separating notebooks. Like, I have a journaling notebook, I have like a therapy notebook, and then I have you know, to-do list notebook now. So just kind of to answer your question, that's actually something I should do, is like have long-term goals like somewhere where I can see them consistently.
And that's
kind of come back to that.
I used to do that, and now I need to get back into it. The reason I'm asking is because I'm thinking more about, you know, how we do that and how I keep track of what, you know, I feel like I'm accomplishing. A lot of times, like, it's all, again, when you get in that like nebulous space, when you're with your finances or your goals or something like that, it just doesn't feel good. But if you can look back and be like, oh wait, I did all this stuff this year. I mean, even in like the 5 or 6 weeks Elijah and I have been working together, like, we put up 2 websites and started producing a podcast and have 6-7 episodes, and like, if you forget that you've done all that, like, then what's the point? You know, so like, or like, you know, you do different versions of your glasses or something, or like you have a breakthrough and you forget that you've done all that. What's you know, that you feel like you're not making progress.
But I think that's kind of one of the nice things about being somewhat you know, messy, is that I have just like prototypes, like, kind of like spread around the apartment. So I could just like look back.
You've got,
like,
evidence, oh shit,
that's
right?
Kind of a shitty pair. I'm glad I like figured out how to make that design better.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What are you working on now? You said you're doing more prescription stuff. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to, I have been messing around with this like Dremel bit that cuts the groove into the your frame to accept lenses. So I have been asking my friends to like donate old pairs of glasses that they have that have their lenses in them still. I'm trying to build new frames around the lenses that they give me.
I've got some pretty thick pairs you can have.
Perfect.
I just said it's horrible. That'd be cool.
I'm here for it.
I just
want to practice, you know, that's where I'm at.
Does Cards have a studio that you can work in, or are you mostly doing this from your house, or?
I go to Cards. They have a laser cutter there, so that's basically the reason I go there. And then I have like tools and other tools and materials. I have a bunch of acrylic that I keep there. They like gave me a shelf to use. So,
oh, very nice.
That's great. I love your. You got a bunch of prototypes. It was like fun. I got to go visit that little studio one day and see all the things you're working on. They're super gnarly. My brother's a big fan of the BART glasses.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Oh, nice.
Kind of round and they go up above your head. Like, awesome.
I'm working on a like a full frame pair of those as well, where it's gonna be like solid yellow, and then the spikes will come up somewhere.
That's awesome.
We'll see.
That's so cool. Well, that's really cool, man. I'm really glad we got to talk to you today.
This was great.
You know, you're like a living, breathing, working artist, making stuff happen in the middle of a global pandemic. Like, and you're pretty chill about it, you know?
At this point, I'm just happy to be able to go somewhere and work and just like, you know, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have unemployment from the, like, I got the gig worker,
the extra support
COVID thing. Yeah. So I'm chilling for the most part and just, I'm really just like, you know, at the beginning of quarantine, everyone's like, we have all this time to, you know, to work on our stuff and like improve and all this stuff. And then everyone just got depressed and like was just holding themselves to too high of standards. And I mean, that's where I was at. And now I'm actually in a place where I'm like excited to just experiment and use that time. And I'm also seeing like the end of that, like extra money.
Yeah.
And so I have, I put a bunch of that money away and just have it for like savings now. And I'm just kind of using the rest of it to buy materials and tools and stuff to set myself up for when it's not there. And just really using the free time to experiment and focus on the glasses. Because I think for a while I was trying to decide whether or not this was just the next thing I was doing with acrylic and laser cutting. You know, I was going to do a couple glasses and then find the next thing. So I wasn't sure if it was going to be that or if I was going to go full in on the glasses, and I just feel like nothing else has grabbed me. So I'm just really like focusing on the glasses and trying to just design them and just like keep improving the design and learning from, you know, things that are made. Like, I'm referencing things that are made in factories. Like, I would say probably 90% of glasses are made in factories.
Yeah.
So like just trying to take those, looking at a pair and like reverse engineering it and looking at the nose pieces and be like, oh, how can I do that with acrylic? How can I bend acrylic to do that? So it's just been a lot of like experimenting and just having fun with it.
That's cool, man. That's exciting. All right, man. Well, thanks for being on this episode. It was really good talking to you. And where can people go to see your art and your work and stuff like that?
I would say the most extensive portfolio is on Instagram. Just at Dan Wilkop, and then
DanWilkop.com
is the website. Thank you.
Perfect. Cool, man. Well, I'm excited to see you in real life eventually.
Yeah,
it was great meeting you.
Same. Yeah, you too.
Thanks for
talking, guys. I appreciate it.
This podcast is sponsored by Clever Editing. The difference between good content and great content is just a little clever editing. Get a quote today at www.cleverediting.com.